Welcome back, guys. This is Pootie's World Cup Podcast, the final episode of the, well, first and best and only officially sanctioned Barstool Soccer Podcast at the moment. We've got on this podcast, Sam. I'm here with the one and only Jimmy Conrad. Welcome back, Jimmy. How you doing?
I'm clapping myself in.
There it is. There's the left. Yeah. There's the clap track.
I'm excited. I'm excited to be here to cap this whole thing off. What a tournament.
What a tournament indeed. A lot of fun, a lot of excitement, a lot of drama, all the good stuff, everything you could ask for. So what we're going to do is we're going to run through the final that France ended up victorious, coming out with a big 4-2 win. We will probably skip over the third place game for the most part because it's sort of a joke and really just there for money. And we'll move on to tournament recaps, and then maybe a little, throw a little something for the people at the end to get them, you know, maybe pique your interest a little bit in the soccer season that's coming up, only 3 weeks away. So we'll get to that. We'll start with the 4-2 win here by France. What were your thoughts on the game?
I thought overall France were the deserved winners. I was pretty surprised, and I think we discussed this before in the previous podcast, that France sat back. Croatia was obviously going to be tired after so many minutes going into extra time, and France just let them dictate the tempo. And for the first 15 to 20 minutes, I was basically screaming at my Twitter, and I actually put out a tweet, and you texted me saying, I can't believe they're sitting back, because they slowed the game down. They were playing at their own pace. I'm talking about Croatia here. And then what changed the outcome, or at least that whole momentum, was Antoine Griezmann diving to get a foul about 10 yards off the top of the box, which led to the own goal. Now, we could argue that that's what Croatia feels comfortable when they're down a goal. So they found their way back into the game. Ivan Perisic with a fantastic finish to make it 1-1. And then they got hosed. I don't say hosed. I think it was the right call with the handball. Perisic brings up his hand. He doesn't have to bring up his hand. I think if he just kept it close to his body, it wouldn't have been called. But VAR gets involved, and that made it 2-1. And I think from that point on, it was going to be too big of an ask for Croatia. I think they looked tired after that.
Yeah, coming in with 3 120-minute performances back-to-back-to-back, you know, and asked to play a France team that just has talent everywhere. It's a tough game. I thought Croatia played really well, and they controlled the game. I mean, I think they had the possession numbers were way in their favor. I don't know what it ended up being, but, you know, their midfield, as we sort of thought might happen, bossed the game, but they just didn't. People were saying that that France might not have been deserving winners. I didn't agree with that at all. I thought that they were the better team on the day, but it was true that they were up 1-0 and then 2-1 without having created a real chance. You know, there was the own goal, and then there was the PK, which we can get to a little bit more in a minute. But they hadn't really created a chance at that point, and they were still up at 2-1 in the game, which was an interesting. It's just soccer's strange like that sometimes.
Yeah, and I think at the highest levels, right, the margins are very thin between success and failure, and France did enough to win that game, and I thought kind of overpowered them at the end. You could sense that France was getting tired, Croatia was getting tired and couldn't maybe make the plays, and reflective of that, I thought, was their goalkeeper, Subasic, who maybe earlier in the tournament, he gets his big paw on one of those shots that they score. Especially the last two goals between Pogba and Kylian Mbappe. He definitely got caught leaning, and it wasn't about his athleticism and not getting over to, but he takes a big step to his left on each goal, because he's either trying to see the ball or he's anticipating, and instead of just maybe holding his ground and trusting that the angles are correct and that he is correct. So I thought, interesting. I can't speak right now. I'm so like, close. I got World Cup fever. This is what happens. The fallout of World Cup fever.
World Cup hangover.
Interestingly enough, he had his worst game in the, probably the biggest game of his career. And I didn't actually think Hugo Lloris was any better for France. He didn't really have to make too many big saves. And then he gave up that howler to give Croatia just that little bit of belief that it could be possible. But for all the hard work that those two guys did in particular to get their teams to the final, it wasn't their best showcase.
Along the same lines, in fact, probably the biggest surprise of the game for me, and there were some weird things that went on, including, you know, France being up without creating a chance, and Lloris's howler, the goal that he gave away to Mandzukic was just awful. It'll end up being a footnote, but, I mean, that could have been, like, a career-defining play. That's just how it goes with the World Cup. But the biggest surprise for me was N'Golo Kanté, who was incredible the entire tournament. You're talking about how Lloris and Subasic were great coming into the final, and they were. Kanté was arguably, you know, among the leaders for the golden ball coming into that game. And so I've been following him for, you know, closely for 3 years now. And I can't even remember him, like, making a bad play, let alone having an entire bad game. And he was awful. I mean, he got Perisic made him look like a parking cone on the first goal, which you never see from Kanté. I don't know what was going on there. He just looked a step slow the entire game. He picked up a sort of a needless yellow card, ended up getting subbed in the 55th minute, I believe it was, for Steven Nzonzi in a game that France was clinging to a 2-1 lead in, and they take away, you know, take out Kanté, which Didier Deschamps could have been, you know, murdered for.
I murdered him for making that decision, because nobody takes out N'Golo Kanté. The guy's a winner, and he would figure out a way to continue to make a positive impact.
Yeah.
I was pretty disappointed in his performance. I'm an N'Golo Kanté apologist, obviously. Yeah, I love the guy. I actually bought a Chelsea jersey with Kanté on the back. Now, there's bigger reasons for that. I was doing an ad campaign with Hertz. But, I mean, I still wanted to have a Kanté jersey. And so I wear it proudly because of the guy on the back. And he's done so much for that team, and he makes a positive impact wherever he goes. But, yeah, he didn't put out his best performance. I think that early yellow card really hurt him, because he's such kind of a gnat, right? He's always breaking up plays, and he takes a few risks when he breaks up those plays. And once he got that, it was a minute before Perisic scored. I think it just changed how he impacted the game, or maybe it got to him mentally. We really don't see that guy rattled all that much, and maybe it just he got overcome or overwhelmed with emotion or maybe not being able to compete the way that he'd like to or how he likes to do it. But, I mean, he's had early yellow cards before and figured out a way to survive the rest of the game. But something got to him. And maybe it was just Perisic. Maybe it was the event, the moment, the pageantry
the
of everything.
And, the
pressure, everything that's riding on this game. So you don't really always know. I mean, these guys are human beings, right? And they're not robots, as much as I think N'Golo Kanté can look like a robot and play like a robot. But because he's so efficient at what he does. But I was disappointed, but I'll give him a pass. He's still a World Cup champion in my heart. That's it. He did it. He proved it.
Yeah, him and Benjamin Mendy.
biggest and World Olivier Cup Giroud. Yeah. You know, whoever thought we'd ever say Olivier Giroud, World Cup champion.
Mendy comes to mind because he basically sat the bench. Well, he was injured, so to give him credit, he was injured like the whole time. But he, you know, came away with an EPL championship and a World Cup championship without really even doing anything.
He's like the Jack Haley of
it's amazing.
You
gotta give him credit. You gotta have some skills to be in that spot. So the one thing about the Kanté performance is it made the golden ball voting probably a lot easier than it was before. I think there was some people who suggested maybe Pogba was in it, which I disagree with. He had a great tournament. Like, this is not like to shit on Pogba's performances or anything like that. He was a great, you know, he had a great tournament pretty much through most of it. He was pretty slow starting. But if you just watch the performances, Modric, for me, was just head and shoulders above anybody in the tournament. He was amazing. And he carried Croatia in times when they absolutely needed him.
Yeah, so I don't think there's any...
I figured it wasn't even close.
Yeah, I don't think anybody has any complaints about Modric getting the golden ball. I thought what was interesting was that Eden Hazard finished second and Griezmann finished third.
Oh, Pogba wasn't even in the top three, huh?
I feel like Kylian Mbappe, who won the Young Player Award, so I feel like they honored him in some capacity, right? And Harry Kane got the Golden Boot, and Thibaut Courtois got the goalkeeper of the tournament. But I don't know. I feel like Mbappe and or Pogba should have been in the top three as well. One of them should have been in the top three. I thought they threw a bone to Griezmann, who, even though he got the numbers and he scored some big penalties and he did it with cool, calm, and composed, manner. But it's, I thought one of those two guys should have been in there, specifically Mbappe. I mean, the guy's a game changer.
Yeah. I was basically going off of Twitter. There were a lot of people on Twitter saying Pogba, you know, he's got a very strong contingent of haters and lovers on Twitter, as somebody with that type of outgoing personality often does. So yeah, I was okay that the one thing I wanted to touch on was the VAR reviewed play on Perisic's handball that you could arguably say it was the turning point of the game. Croatia had just come back and tied the game up at 1-1, and I don't know who the France player was, but it just went right over their head on a corner kick, and his hand, you know, it looked like it was just where a hand would be, and the ball, you know, it clearly hit the hand, so it's not like you can argue that part. What did you think of the call?
So the call itself, yeah, I thought his hand flared up a bit and came out, you know, okay. And as a player that's defending on set pieces, you've already seen plenty of examples of them calling that type of stuff. Gerard Piqué stands out where he put up his hand, put it back down, put it back up again, and got a penalty called on him. It was blatant, you know,
yeah,
and so for him to argue
blatant,
otherwise was, yeah, it was insane. And I think Perisic is just, what are you doing? You know they're going to call that type of stuff. They have the technology to review that stuff. Keep your arms to the side.
Yeah.
It's unfortunate because you're right. It did change the game. Anytime you give up a goal right before halftime, it changes everything that you're doing, what you're saying to each other, you know, and letting go of a missed opportunity because you worked hard to get it back to 1-1. You just want to get to halftime so you can kind of reset at even with 45 minutes to go, and that play changes everything. My biggest complaint, though, prior to that was the fact that Croatia was in zonal marking, and that allowed Blaise Matuidi to run through. If you see his run, and credit to him, he's like slaloming through five Croatian guys, he gets himself into a good spot to make a play on the ball. My beef is they should have somebody on him. Like if you had, let's say maybe you just had two guys zonal marking, okay? Those two guys are free to attack the ball. They don't have to like get tangled with anybody. But if you have a guy on Matuidi, he never even gets into that position because he'll never have enough momentum to find himself in between two or three guys. It just wouldn't happen. So that's really frustrating. And I understand probably a lot of the teams and managers wanting to go into zonal defending because so much tangling was being called for penalties. But you can still not let a guy get some momentum. And I thought Croatia shut off in that play in particular. All one Croatian guy, even if we wanted to stay in the zonal defending, all one Croatian guy had to do was look to see where Matuidi was coming and maybe give him a little nudge or just get into his path to slow him down. And there was no slowing down. I mean, if you want to go back and watch this goal, watch Matuidi. He comes all the way from the back to the front and nobody touches him. And then he gets a little bit of a flick on it and it hits Perisic's hand. And now we're talking about kind of a VAR call instead of what I think was the bigger problem, which is zonal defending.
Yeah. Yeah, it comes, well, that basically is that's the problem with zonal defending. If you're not responsible for an individual, you're just sort of floating.
I mean, even when I played, I loved when teams had zonal defending because I knew that I was going to get a run up on the ball and I actually could jump probably at the top of my height, which isn't much, but I could get there, you know, and have a better chance at it. As opposed to if I had somebody on me, I knew that I was going to have to fight that guy off and then hope that the ball lands in the same space that I'm coming in, as opposed to maybe being able to have that momentum to adjust. I zonal defending sucks. That's all I'm just going to say that for the record. I think it's stupid. I think one or two guys can do it, but the rest of the team needs to be marking the best guys that are headers on the opposing team.
Well, congratulations, France. Deserving winners. I think we agree on that. You know, 4 years of being the champ now, heading into 2022 when the U.S. will take over the world.
I love that, by the way. Can we talk about a fun fact, though? Because Italy won it in 2006 and then didn't get out of the group stages in 2010.
Oh, yeah.
And then Spain won it in 2010, didn't get out of the group stages in 2014. Germany won it in 2014, didn't get out of the group stages in 2018. So, France, congratulations. But you're not getting out of the group stages in 2022.
Well, one thing I'd say about that, so they are the second youngest team in the World Cup.
I don't care.
I don't care about facts.
I care about history. History's it's going to repeat itself yet again. So France, enjoy this. You're going to flame out in 2022.
I like it. I was going to say the complete opposite. They're in a perfect position where they actually might not do that, but you're right. History, never doubt history.
We need another red, white, and blue team to step up and take over, okay? France is done. They had their turn.
That's right. We got them right where we want them. No expectations. So third place game, I mean, Belgium beat England in a meaningless game for the second time this tournament. So congrats to Belgium. Belgium was the better team, you know.
Yeah, I agree with you on the meaningless part. But from Belgium's point of view, the last time they had their golden generation was in the mid-'80s. And they got third in the 1986 World Cup. And they were excellent. I mean, obviously, I don't remember that. I was a much younger lad back then. I have no recollection of their performances. But from what I've read and the highlights I've seen, they were excellent back then. And so I think it was very important for Belgium and this golden generation to at least match that one. So I think they took it a little bit more serious, and I think the result reflected that. Now, I get a big kick out of England finishing fourth. They didn't get any medals. They're just right off the medal stand. So technically, they did just as good as the U.S., yeah. Right? We didn't make the medal stand either. So I think we're all even there. So, you know,
they ended up on the couch with a participation ribbon.
Exactly. Well, just like the
they beat us on the ribbon. But that's pretty much it. I got another question for you on that, but we'll get to that. First, we're switching it up on people here. Switching off myself, even on the plan we had coming in, but do the quick ad read, and then we'll jump into the tournament recap. So, cutting the cord used to mean cutting yourself off from all the World Cup action, but now with ExpressVPN, you can watch every World Cup match on your computer, phone, or tablet. Seriously, this is the biggest secret cable companies don't want you to hear about. And yes, the World Cup is over, but keep listening. There's more reasons for this. So ExpressVPN can get you a UK IP address, letting you stream directly from the BBC. And obviously, you know, they got all sorts of shows over there that, you know, that we haven't stolen yet, but we will soon enough. So it also lets you securely use the internet without being tracked by anyone. ExpressVPN keeps my online activity private and anonymous while I browse, email, download, or stream. Their easy-to-use app encrypts all my internet data and hides my IP address, protecting my entire connection. ExpressVPN costs less than $7 a month and runs seamlessly in the background of my computer, phone, or tablet. Every time you use the internet without ExpressVPN, you're putting sensitive data at risk. To unlock access to the streaming content you want today and find out how you can get 3 months free, go to expressvpn.com/sam. That's ExpressVPN.com/Sam for 3 months free with a 1 year package. Visit ExpressVPN.com/Sam to learn more. Deep breath. Okay.
That was a mouthful, but awesome.
Got through it. Yeah.
Like
so,
guys.
Yeah, ExpressVPN. Check them out. So now we'll jump into the tournament recap. You know, we got. I mean, we could sit here for hours and talk about this World Cup. It was fantastic. It sounds a little disingenuous when all the, you know, Rob Stones and Alexi Lalases of the world are all going on about the best World Cup ever, the best World Cup ever. I mean, they're getting paid to essentially do that. So even if it's true, which I'm not sure I can disagree with it. It just sounds a little disingenuous coming from Fox, you know, people. What do you think? Was this the best World Cup ever?
Oh, it's every 4 years, and I feel like there's some
recency bias is big.
Yeah, for sure, and some romanticism around this event. But there did seem like there were a lot of talking points in every game. I don't remember. I watched almost every single game. Was there 62 games, and I think I watched 60 of them. So I never felt bored by any of them. There was the Denmark versus France game that was 0-0. It was the last group stage game. That one. I could have done without. I want those 90 minutes of my life back. But I would say overall, there was a lot of intrigue. There was a lot of talking points is a crappy way to say it.
That's right.
I mean, but there is. I mean, there's just this a healthy dialogue about the sport in general and what it's doing. And I think it just there's so many offshoots, right? Of, well, look what Belgium's doing, you know, and look at how France is developing players and. How did they do that? And with the second youngest team, and look what England's done. You know, they took some risks in bringing younger players instead of their tried and true, and it paid off for them. And they had a spirit about them, right? I think of anything that I really loved about a lot of the teams that I watched was the spirit about their teams. And it wasn't always about the best 23 players that they had available, or even starting their best 11 players on paper. They put out a lot of the managers put out teams that had a good enthusiasm and would put everything out on the line, and it didn't always necessarily mean talent. It was more about the heart and desire to make it happen, and that's why I love some of the like Iran, for example. I thought they were so close to knocking out Portugal, and man, they laid it all out there. And we can say whatever we want about, you know, the politics and the overarching stuff that's happening, but we saw 11 guys from a country, no matter what that country stands for, lay it all out there, and I think we can all respect that part of it, you know, and I think that's what's really unique and special about this tournament in particular. Now, I'm still on the fence about 48 teams because
you might
seem like an India or Sri Lanka get in there, which is kind of cool until they get beat 10-0, and then it's not so cool anymore. And then we're going to have all these golden boot records
Yeah,
smashed
exactly.
because you have
The record books will be out the door.
yeah
You know
yeah
what
it's almost like the record books need to be have a like different column, like
I
this
mean?
is what it was for 24 teams back in the day, and then 32. I mean, the World Cup used to be 16 teams,
I
man.
Know. I was going to say,
it
you
was
know,
hard.
the World Cup has been expanding for many years. I mean,
Yeah.
it was like 8 teams for a while, maybe even less than that. I mean, they've
No, I think
gradually
it's, yeah.
expanded, but 48 from 32 is, number one, a huge jump. I mean, that's a 50%
Yeah.
addition on top. And I'm just not, I'm in fact, I'm confident that there aren't 48 teams that belong in the tournament.
Right, right. And I mean, the tournament won't even start until you get to the round of 16, 32. I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see how that all plays out. I mean, I'm still on the fence because I think there are going to be some special stories that come away from it. You know, there's going to be like a Mozambique who would never have a chance otherwise getting into the tournament, and seeing that, what that means to that country will be really,
Yeah,
really
that'll be
neat.
cool.
But outside of that, that's a handful of stories, and I don't know if it's entirely worth it to do that. Now, money talks, right? And that's what FIFA's all about. So,
well, that's exactly why it's going to
that's a
happen.
different conversation.
It's not
Anyway,
it's not an if, but when.
Sure.
There's 48 teams. It's just
Yeah.
money talks.
I mean,
FIFA's that's the only thing they listen to.
I think there's, what, 200 and something countries that try to qualify. You might as well just open it up to everybody and just start from the beginning. We'll have a big March Madness. You know, the number one seed versus number 212, and see how it goes. But
the U.S. will never miss the World Cup again, then.
Exactly. That's a positive. Anyway, so you asked me about some of my thoughts. I went off on about 75 tangents, so you guys can decide that you're listening which one you like the best.
Yeah, well, that's that. There are so many talking about. You could go in a million directions with this. I did. The thing about the best World Cup ever, you're right, there's romanticism, there's recency bias, there's all this stuff. But one of the two things that stuck out to me, one being a reason why it may have been the best, and then one reason why it may not have been the best. The may not was because the U.S. wasn't there. It gave us more time and energy to focus on all the other stuff that was going on. Whereas when the U.S. is there, it's so easy to get just wrapped up in what the U.S. is doing, how they're doing, who they're going to play next, and just focus on that little bubble of the U.S. And their path. So I think that the fact the U.S. wasn't there, it just opened our eyes a little bit to all the drama that was going on. Now, on the other side of things, I clearly have no life. I watched every single game, and I can only think off my top of my head three games that were sort of like not, there was nothing going on there, and I've wanted 90 minutes of my life back. There was an Iran-Morocco game early, which was really bad, although at least that had the you know, extra time or stoppage time finish with an own goal. So there was
right.
a talking point come out of there, I guess. Sweden-Switzerland in the knockouts was real tough. And you mentioned France and, I think, Denmark.
That's right.
So those were the three that really stood out as having just nothing, like no shootout to make them, compelling in the end. And so that's three out of like 60, I don't know how many games, 60 some games. That is an incredibly small number of total snoozers. So I was thoroughly entertained. I loved this World Cup. I can't wait for the next one, obviously.
No, I think you make a great point about the U.S. not being in it, because it freed us as viewers to lose our jingoism in some capacity. You know, we have to go over the top, USA, USA, USA. And though we missed out on some other things, right, which is bringing people together. I all my English friends were so thrilled about, because their country is obviously a little bit all over the place on a lot of different issues. And so to have one thing to unify behind was very special for them, and I think something that they're very proud of. And that's another component of the World Cup, is it does bring everybody together. And it would have been cool for us as well, because, in some ways we're a bit fractured with a lot of different things in a lot of different ways. So it would have been nice to set that aside, even for a month, just to be like, hey, or, well, I don't, who's to say we would have got out of our group. So for at least 2 weeks and come together on something. And I think that's what makes sports such a powerful vehicle for peace and for understanding and empathy and all that.
Well, Gold Cup's coming up, so we got our next
shot. Well, we have the Women's World Cup next summer.
That's true.
And I'm actually want to go. You know, obviously the women are defending champions.
Good.
So yeah, good and yeah. So I definitely want to go support them, and I think that'll be very exciting. So yeah, I'm glad everything's not male centric, and we can kind of focus on our wonderful females who are super talented.
Yeah, it is nice to know that we have a shot to win, something. one of these days. I'd say that as a Tottenham fan, not necessarily as a US fan. Well, you mentioned England. Wanted to bring that up. So there was a lot of dismissiveness of England, sort of a Monday morning quarterbacking dismissiveness of England, based on, the way they lost to Croatia, followed by Belgium. People were suggesting that they were definitely not among the top four teams in the tournament. They won three games. They ended up losing three games. Which is pretty impressive, actually. And then, you could say it's a draw. They beat Colombia, but it was a draw after regulation. So 3-3-1. What did you think? Were they one of the best four teams?
Maybe not one of the best four teams, but I think maybe one of the best and more efficient teams, with regard to taking advantage of their situation. We could argue their first loss against Belgium in the group stage games or the group stages. It was, they rolled out like nine different changes. If they won, they didn't really want to win and go to the
It was
tougher
a
part of the
strategic
bracket. Yeah, it
loss.
was very
It was a
strategic.
good
They weren't.
loss.
It was a great loss. So I think I don't know if I count that one so much. They were definitely winning. They weren't putting their best foot forward. With regard to Colombia, for me, they did enough to win that game. They fell asleep there at the very last minute. But James Rodriguez wasn't playing for Colombia, so. That obviously changes things, but injuries are going to be part of it, right? And then Croatia, that's the one that one hurts. I'm surprised they didn't give a little bit more in that third place game against Belgium. But as I mentioned earlier, I thought it meant more to Belgium to finish third than it did to England. So I don't know. I'm not giving them a total free pass on a couple of those, but I thought the Croatia one. Is going to sting because with 22 minutes left, they had a 1-0 lead, and they just needed a few guys on that team that knew how to put their foot on the ball, slow it down, and not only hold on to the lead at 1-0, but also when it went 1-1, to make sure that you sawed out the penalties, right? You had a couple of mature guys like that knew how to figure out, all right, relax, everybody. Let's not completely capitulate here. And they couldn't get out of their own way. And I thought they showed a little bit of their immaturity and youth. In that game in particular, and Croatia just wore him down. Now,
That's a
really quick
risk,
about
yeah.
Croatia because we didn't bring this up earlier, but Dejan Lovren. I don't know if people saw this or not, but after Croatia got to the final, first thing he came out of his mouth is that he should be considered one of the best defenders in the world because he helped Liverpool and Croatia get to the biggest finals. And
Shoot your shot, big fella.
well, yeah, and I appreciate that. And he strategically, from a PR perspective, did it right because he said this before the final. But if you look at both of those finals, he gave up seven goals in those two combined games. So I
That's
don't
why
know if
people
you can
aren't giving
consider
him the credit.
yourself the world's best defender if you're shipping seven goals in those two finals. So I just want to give a shout out to Dejan Lovren because I think he's going to hear a ton of shit when he goes back to Liverpool from here on out. I have no problem with the guy. I think he works incredibly hard. He's always playing for the team. I don't think he's as good as maybe he thinks he is, but he's not as bad either as people think he is. So, he's somewhere in the middle there. But yeah, I mean, he is a lightning rod for getting shit. That's for sure.
Yeah, and it's the way he makes mistakes that are just so glaring sometimes that you're just like, Jesus Christ, man, come on. For some reason, I equate it with Kyle Walker as well. Like, they just make these boneheaded errors that you're just like, how are you even like on the field doing that sort of stuff? Well, while we're on the, I got a little soapbox topic for while we're on the topic of Croatia. So, I said it before the final that Croatia was not going to get the credit they sort of deserved for the impressiveness of the run that they made, especially given all the behind the scenes turmoil and everything like that. So it probably is going to be forgotten, this incredible run that they made in getting to the final. And part of me feels like it's too bad that it's going to be forgotten, but at the same time, it's unfortunate, but I'm kind of okay with it the more I thought about it, because that's part of the reason that you want the World Cup is so compelling, because all the accolades go to the winner, right? It's winner take all, do or die. France won, they deserve all the glory. So if you start giving too much credit to, say, Croatia, for their incredible run, it's basically a slippery slope. Do you then start giving a bunch of credit to Uruguay, who could have made it that far had they not lost their best striker? You know, could you give credit for Belgium for being essentially maybe the most entertaining game in, game out team, you know? And, you know, soon enough you're giving, like, you know, the US credit for giving all they had against Trinidad and Tobago. You know,
No,
it's just sort of a slippery slope there.
well, we were the last friendly before for France before they
Oh
start
my
the World Cup. So
gosh.
I think we drew 1-1 with our younger players. I'm just saying, they couldn't have picked a better partner to spar with before the real fight. You know what I mean?
I put out a lot of stuff on social media sometimes just to get a rise out of people. I guess intentionally inflammatory, you might call it. I put
You?
out,
No
yeah,
way.
me?
I don't
What?
buy that at all. That is.
I didn't really admit that, but okay, yeah, I sort of do that. So, but I put out an Instagram post on essentially being the tweet where the U.S., you know, beat France, the world. So we've been essentially congratulating the U.S. on being co-World Cup champions for beating France 1-1 in the friendly leading up to the World Cup. And the amount of butt-hurtedness that like got out of people was insane. People,
Yeah,
I must have
it's.
gotten called a right CUNT like by a million people. My DMs were blowing up with people just
Well
wanting to
played
arm
then.
wrestle
Well,
me.
very well played. Very well
Just,
played.
but it was, I mean, and then it was France's starting 11, essentially. There might have been a person or two out there, but like people were like, oh, it was a B team. No, that was the US's, you know, US's babies, which is our, should be our team going forward, versus
It
France's
will be.
starting
It will be.
11.
Yeah.
Yeah, people did not like that at all. So let's move on to, let's say, game of the tournament and goal of the tournament. Let's start with game of the tournament. What, you know, there's a million different ways you could go with this, but just for you, what's the game that's going to stand out?
Spain Portugal is the first thing that came to my mind. The 3-3 game, Cristiano Ronaldo stepping up, hitting an incredible free kick with no time left to do that. That was when he got accused by Spain for tax evasion and all that good
Yeah,
stuff. They
hours
dropped that,
after, yeah.
yeah, hours before the whole thing went off. The guy scores a hat trick. I mean, sure, David De Gea helped him out a little bit with pushing one into his own goal, but that was a great game. And
It got the World Cup started off on the right
it
foot.
really did. And I just remember the traction around that game. So many people were talking about that game. And you're right. I think it did really kind of like, all right, this thing is really starting now. This is a legit game. So that one stands out for me. I'm trying to think of any other games. I thought the Brazil-Mexico game in particular, because Mexico came in with so much hype. Can they do it against Brazil? You
In the
know,
round of 16, no
in the
less.
round of 16, everything's, you know, that's like a local rival to see if they can do it. And then, you know, their manager, he's got his mistress and his wife at the game at the same time. Just epic stories coming out of that one. But so much on the field and off the field intrigue. So that one was a good one. You know, Brazil Belgium was a good game as well. I mean, there was a lot of good games, but that Spain Portugal one I think is number one for me.
That's actually the one I had listed as number one as well. The other ones I had listed just you know, as being almost as good, where I had Japan, Belgium was just, you know, the way that Japan came out and, you
Yeah,
know,
it was a
didn't
good game,
necessarily
right?
dominate the game, but went up 2-0 and looked like they were going to be knocking Belgium, one of the favorites out, was, and then Belgium, the way they came back and that goal they scored. Well, we'll get to that in a minute. But Argentina, France was another one that was
Yeah, that was a
just
good
a
one.
lot of fun. It was just
Yeah, a
like
lot.
a really entertaining game to watch. Personally, Uruguay Portugal was just massive because it was a battle between, like, it was a death match between me and the haters, because I've been like shitting on Portugal and Ronnie the whole previews, and a lot of people were shitting on me, and I had Uruguay as my dark horse, which ended up, you know, not working out. But at least if Portugal had beaten Uruguay in that game, I would have looked like a real moron, even bigger moron than I already am. So I was so happy that Uruguay came through that. So yeah, there was just a ton. And then obviously the final 4-2, six goals in the game that everybody's watching. I mean, that's it wasn't the greatest game, but it was entertaining and a lot of talking points.
Yeah, I'll agree with that because the three previous finals were tight.
Right, they've always been
So
so
tight.
horrible. Yeah.
So that early goal, because France did look a little tight to start, that early goal, I think it allowed them to relax in particular,
I
and they
was
probably should have
scared
the
when they
chase game.
first came out, the way that France was playing, and they were sort of sitting back, and I thought it was just they were going to play for a 1-0 win. I thought
Yeah.
that's what it was going to. Yeah, that
Well,
early goal really
which is
changed
exactly
things.
what they did against Belgium. So
Exactly.
I
I thought
was
it was
like,
going to be a
oh
total
man,
repeat. Yeah.
he's doing it again. I was so disappointed in Deschamps. I ended up complimenting Deschamps at the end because he did press the right buttons. He had the courage to take out Conte and put in Nzonzi. And right after that happened, they scored two more goals. So I don't know if it's due to that, but it just seemed like, you know, whatever was working, he did it. And now this is a guy that, won a World Cup in 98 as a player, and now he did it as a manager, and you just can't take it away from him. You had to respect what he did on both on and off the field. So I yeah. had to give him a bit of a shout out, even though people are like, oh, Deschamps didn't do anything. He's just got all the players. And yeah, he does have some good players, but you still have to put those guys in the right spot and motivate them in the right way to play to their potential. So
that's kind of like that reminds me of Harry Kane being the golden ball winner, where he got, I mean, there were a lot of people shitting on him on Twitter for, you know, I think his goals were not like incredibly, I think he had one that was like a complete deflection he didn't even know about. There were some PKs, there was a header from like 2 feet out, and people were saying, oh, is he like the least impressive golden ball winner in history? And, you know, I of course just,
I would say maybe his goals were the least impressive, but in terms of being a player, like Scalacci back in 90, like that guy peaked. He had like 6 or 7 goals in that tournament. Never heard from him again. You know, Harry Kane's impressive, you know, in a lot of different ways. But yes, I was disappointed, though, that he didn't score in the run of play outside of the one that hit his heel.
Yeah.
Everything was set pieces.
Well, the header. The set piece. Yeah.
Yeah, set pieces. So it's just, did he do enough to create? You know, he wasn't even doing that against Panama or whatever. Now, we could argue that his presence alone opens up space for other guys and so on and so forth.
Right, and how much of it is a knock on the midfield, not really, you know, essentially finding openings for him. Yeah, I agree. I sort of want to go on like a leave Brittany alone, you know, rant to defend him. But really, I'll just say haters gonna hate. Haters gonna hate. Sorry you won it. So now we'll go back to the goal of the tournament.
Man, this is a tough one for me.
Yeah.
Because you had the Nacho goal and the Spain-Portugal one where he hits it clean. You have the Benjamin Pavard, French right back, who hits – he kind of like mishit – didn't hit it as clean. He didn't hit it as clean as Nacho, but it went in cleaner than Nacho's. Like Nacho's hit 2 bars and it like didn't hit the back of the net in the same way. I thought Coutinho had an amazing curling goal. I can't remember who the opponent was at the time. Maybe it was Switzerland. And that was ridiculous, and I thought that he played really well throughout the tournament. I don't know. It's I'm trying to think of who else. I mean, there's different types of goals, right? Is it the one that like that first time volley back post that you really like? This is so subjective. Or you know, is it the monumental goal, the one that like broke it open, or was it a run that set up something else? You know, because Kylian Mbappe could probably claim a few of those.
The ones that I had written down were Pavard and Nacho. I mean, those are two. Incredibly beautiful goals. I would lean towards Pavard. You're right. It was sort of,
he didn't miss it.
It just wasn't as like a bomb, you know.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, yeah.
And that was because the ball was high.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
And he had it, so it was almost more difficult, I would say. And,
yeah,
I would actually give that one more credit than Nacho, only because the circumstance.
Sure.
You know, it was in the knockouts. It was
Fair.
Argentina had just gone up on France in that game. It was either to tie the game back up or to go ahead.
It was 2-2, I think. Yeah.
Yeah, it was a huge, huge moment for France, and which ended up, you know, winning the tournament. So I would give Pavard. So I split him into individual goals, and I don't know if I mentioned Quaresma for Portugal, had a really nice one.
He did. Messi's goal against Nigeria was sick.
Messi's was really nice too.
Yeah.
I would give it to Pavard, especially with the way that France then went on to win the tournament. And then there was a team goal with Belgium's counterattack buzzer beater against Japan is one of the, if you watch this, speaking of slalom, if you watch the run that Lukaku did for half a field going back and forth and back, never once touching the ball, but opening field up for 3 different teammates, not touching the ball, but then, you know, dummying it for, I think, Chadley finishing the goal and that essentially being a legitimate buzzer beater. That was just... As far as team goals,
no, you're
that
right. That was a classy goal. I mean, even Japan scored 2 good goals in that one.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of good goals and like timely moments. Like, God, these guys. I always marvel at the guys that have that concentration and focus at the exact right moment to pull off some of these goals. I know that there's years and years of repetition and they're so automatic to them. Get it off your feet and hit it. I mean, even Perisic's goal in the final. You know, the fact that he, you know, bounce around a few times and he takes a good first touch over to his left and just crushes it. That technique is something kids should watch over and over and over. He's got the best defensive midfielder in the world in N'Golo Kanté on him. And he fakes the right, goes to his left and buries it. I mean, if you want to show kids what it should look like, that's it. You know, that's those are that's how you create space. That's how you create these little gaps to do the things that you want to do. So yeah, there's a lot of special goals, man. It's
that,
great.
That reminds me of there was another one. I think it was Granit Xhaka in I can't remember who Switzerland was playing. It was in the group stage though.
It was yeah, I know who it was. It was Serbia. No, was it Serbia?
Yeah, you're right. It was Serbia.
No, wait, not Serbia. Was it Serbia?
It was Serbia or Croatia. Yeah, it was Serbia. I'm pretty sure it was Serbia definitely
was in
Serbia.
It, right? Serbia was in it, right?
Serbia was in it. Yeah. You're right. It was Serbia. It was one
they
of those
so
goals
pissed.
That I tweeted. Yeah. I tweeted right after. I said that you have to be an asshole to even try that shot. And he probably is an asshole after actually some of the stuff he does. But it was such a great hit. And
yeah,
there's so
Serbia.
Many goals. People love arguing about goals. There's just it's like arguing about like supermodels. Who's the hottest supermodel? It's like,
yeah,
man, they're just beautiful. So that's I guess that's all we had for the tournament. It's just I'm excited. It's I'm sad. I'm excited. I got a hangover. But four more years, it'll be back. Thankfully though, this is what we want to transition into. You know, soccer isn't dying. You know, soccer isn't going away. So everybody who is, you know, been interested in, especially among the more casual fans, the people who've gotten a little more interested in the soccer from the World Cup, there is. So right off the bat, we got MLS starting right now. Well, not starting, but continuing for the next few weeks. We'll have transfer talk news, transfer news for, starting pretty heavy probably in the next few weeks. And then the European season is back in
mid-August.
Early to mid-August.
Yeah.
So this is like, soccer's not going away. It's not dying on the vine. There's a lot of soccer still to consume. So
yeah,
I would
say this to everybody listening. If you're in the States in particular, and this is a sport that you're starting to grow fond of, try to support local. So whether there's an MLS team in your market or not, or maybe there's a PDL team or USL team, which are the second and third divisions, fourth divisions in our countries, in this country, it's really important that these teams get support, because if we really want to compete for a World Cup moving forward, we need to know that there's thriving divisions and that people want our team to do well and that these teams are supported. So if you're buying a $5 or $10 ticket, it makes a difference, and it keeps the dream alive for a lot of players that could make a significant impact. And as somebody who was a late bloomer who didn't get drafted into MLS and played in these leagues and then got into MLS and had to fight my way into the national team and play in a World Cup, those lower leagues and that they exist are so important. So even if you have an MLS club, go support them as well. I mean, it's an important part of it. And you might not agree with the business structure. You might not agree with how the game's developing in this country. But there still needs to be an effort towards supporting the players and the process. And so I really encourage you to do that. And then as an American, as we tend to do, we all support like four different clubs in different countries. So, you know, I play for Sporting Kansas City for most of my career, so they're my number one MLS team. And then I support Newcastle in England. And then because I do this YouTube stuff too, it actually behooves me to choose other clubs. So I love Atletico Madrid in Spain. They really actually speak to me as a person. I almost represent my playing style as a hard worker that just fought for everything, and that's Atleti. You know, Barcelona's super talented. Real Madrid buy all their players, even though they're super talented as well. You know, everybody's got their philosophies and styles, and there's a club out there that speaks to you. So I encourage you to support local, get behind your local teams, no matter what division they are in this country, and then pick a team or two that are across this, get to know their team a little bit, and I think you're going to have a blast, because when you watch a game, especially on Twitter or whatever, there's always thousands of other people watching the same game, and you get tapped into this community that is unlike anything else, and you probably got a taste of it during the World Cup. So I go highly encourage you to go find a team and support somebody.
And then there's also, and I will do a little plug for the blogs that I do. So I'm focused mainly during the season on EPL and Champions League. With, you know, I touch on La Liga and Bundesliga and Serie A as well, just because, you know, there's great soccer everywhere. Don't want to just limit it. But we'll have a guide to picking an EPL club team. I do it every year, right before the season starts or week or two before. As you said, you know, don't just pick a team for one reason or two reasons. You know, just give it, let it grow organically within you. You know, there's no need to jump in and pick a team. Just
I love that you do that, by the way. I think it's really important. And so I encourage people. You're at Barstool Sam. Is that what it is on Twitter?
Yep.
And I'm at Jimmy Conrad. So if you want to reach out to us, just tell us what team you support in any other sport. And we'll find a club from around the world that is like-minded to that. You know, if you support the Packers, you know, we'll figure out a club that has a lot of history, that's won a lot of championships in the past, but hasn't done it recently. Maybe that's Liverpool for you. You know, I mean, so there's a lot of different ways that we can find a comparison for the sports team that you currently support. So just reach out to us. I think we would love to have that to do that exercise with you guys. So yeah, make that happen.
Absolutely. So the next few weeks, you know, there'll be transfer talk, there'll be MLS, and then the EPL, and you know, La Liga and Bundesliga and everything, Champions League, in Europa League. You know, you got some Arsenal fans out there, gotta give them a shout out. So you know, there's all sorts of there. It's a complicated ecosystem of soccer, and you know, it is and it isn't.
Once you get tapped in, and once you realize, okay, they have a league. Okay, like a league like anywhere else. And they play, most of them play 38 games, and the best team after 38 games is the champion. All right, I think I can understand that. Even if you didn't graduate high school, I think you can still understand that concept. And then there's some outside tournaments that you qualified for from the previous season. So if you get the top four,
right.
Yeah, if you get top four, you're going to be in the Champions League. If you got from like fifth to eighth, you're going to be in the second tier called the Europa League. And then do you have these like bigger tournaments that include other countries, and then you have other clubs in those countries, and then you have your domestic cup, right? It's kind of like a March Madness knockout thing. So there's really three things you should focus on: the domestic cup, which I just said, March Madness style. You have the league, best after 38 games, and then if your team did well enough the previous season, you just kind of qualified for this bigger tournament, which has more prestige. And that's it. It's a three-pronged attack. If you got that down, everything else is going to be gravy.
It seems complicated because they're all playing at the same time.
Sure, really, yeah, that's true.
And it also gives you the best of both worlds. A lot of people talk about how EPL needs a playoff at the end of the season. No, it doesn't, because they already have the playoff, one game knockout, winner go home through the FA Cup, you know, through the domestic cup, and so it's the best of both worlds with all these different competitions going on, overlapping.
Can I say this about the playoffs really quick? I wish MLS would go to a straight table where you just played 34 games and whoever was the best, because I feel like that rewards the team that was the best over 10 months and not the hottest team at the end of the season that's good for 4 weeks. And that's my biggest complaint about playoffs. It's very American. I grew up here. I love the playoffs. I love everything that it does. I love all the great moments that come out of it. But when it comes to trying to show who the best team is over a season, I think it's a shitty way to do it, frankly. And I'm glad that a domestic cup exists, because you have that one-off tournament, so you kind of scratch that itch, but you're also rewarding the team that was the best over 10 months. And I think that's the most fair way and democratic way to do it.
It's also a good way to boost the importance of the U.S. Open Cup,
which we don't do here. And
we
don't have enough time on this podcast for me to talk.
We won't even get into it, but it's essentially
that makes
the
me
FA
so
Cup
upset.
The US.
Makes me so upset.
Someday we'll fix soccer. We got this. Whether it's through more podcasts or not, we will see. But can't thank you guys enough for subscribing, downloading, and all that stuff. Really appreciate it from the bottom of my heart. And Jimmy, can't thank you enough for coming on.
I love you, Sam.
It's been a pleasure.
I love you guys.
I miss you guys already. I miss you. I love you. And take care, guys. Been real.